Hello again, everybody. This is Lance Russell with Championship Wrestling with another big week. Join us right now.
We want to talk about some pop culture stuff. We want to review some of our favorite things from 2015. And we did this last year and thoroughly enjoyed it. And so I'm just going to throw some topics out there. We're going to talk about it.
Let's do it.
Just going to talk.
We're just going to talk.
Mark.
It's going to be good.
Let's start out. I got one, two, three, four. I got five topics here.
Okay.
What was the best book you read? Your favorite book you read this year?
I see you asking me. I'm going to give you a couple that I read.
All right.
That I really enjoyed. The first one. Probably the top. Well, okay, I'm going to tell you two wrestling books and two non-wrestling books. The two non-wrestling, and these weren't written in 2015 with the exception of one of them, but I read them in 2015. One was In the Heart of the Sea, which was made into a film with by Ron Howard, which tells the story of the whale ship Essex.
Yeah. I've got that book on Audible, but I haven't listened to it yet.
Well, I read it.
Well, yeah.
Because, you know, I like to read books.
Yes.
Man, it tells the story of Nantucket and the whaling industry at that time and how it really built that town, that community. And these guys would be out for years at a time. And the sperm whale, do you know why they call them sperm whales, Heath?
I don't.
I'm going to tell you because it is a very interesting thing. They take the whale and they process it and turn it into oil.
Yeah.
And that was what it was all about. They weren't getting the meat. They rendered fat from these whales on the ship. They'd get them on the boat and like strip the carcass and extract the oil from it. But inside the head of the sperm whale, they would split it open and there was a more expensive oil in there. And it looks like sperm.
Really?
Yeah. And that's why they call them sperm whales. That's what it looks like.
I did not know that.
And they say that they had this sperm whale washed up on shore. Well, they have a Nantucket Whaling Museum up there. So they basically decided, how do we strip all the meat off of these bones? Because this has been just a few years ago. They wanted to put the skeleton in the museum.
Yeah.
So they took the skeleton, put it in a cage, or the whale, put it inside of a cage and lowered it down into the water and left it there for a year. And let the scavengers come in and they picked the bones clean.
And now they've got the skeleton.
And now they've got the skeleton in the museum of this sperm whale that it washed up. Well, anyway, they bring the skeleton up and it's still apparently leaking oil, just the skeleton. That's how much oil was in these things.
Golly.
So they were making a ton of money doing this. Well, one of the sperm whales rams the ship.
Yeah.
Sinks it. And these guys float adrift in the ocean for months. I mean, and it's just this captivating story of these guys that... I mean, they succumbed to one of the ultimate taboos, cannibalism.
Yeah.
Obviously to survive. And like they find these guys basically sucking the marrow out of their shipmates' bones at some point. They go to this island where there's like this, they're about to die.
Yeah.
Well, they find this island and think, man, we finally made it. And then they get there and there's like one freshwater spring that's only available for like an hour a day when the tide lowers.
Yeah.
And so they kind of get them some water and there's all these little birds, but there's nothing else on this island. You can't even get to parts of it. So they leave a couple of guys behind.
Yeah.
Just to make the trip easier. And I mean, you just have to, it's just this great. I love man versus nature.
Yeah.
Type stuff. So that was good. The Revenant.
Yeah. You read?
Yeah, I read The Revenant. At the very beginning of the year, there's a movie coming out about it too.
Yeah.
It should be out now with Leonardo DiCaprio. Matter of fact, I'm probably going to see it next week.
Yeah.
And if you don't know the story, it's a true story of, yeah. of Hugh Glass, who was out he was a explorer, trapper, tracker kind of, you know, they would hire him to go on these expeditions and shoot stuff. Well, anyway, he gets attacked by a bear and left for dead out in the middle of the woods. And I've read this story years ago.
Right.
There's an old movie called Man in the Wilderness that's yeah. based on it with Richard Chamberlain. Richard Chamberlain. Maybe it is Richard Chamberlain.
Right.
What's that guy's name? He was Dumbledore in the first Harry Potter movie. He was English Bob in
I know
Unforgiven. It ain't Richard Chamberlain. I can't think of his name, though.
He was the man called Horse.
Yeah.
Everybody knows who we're talking about.
Anyway, attacked by a bear. They leave a couple of guys with him. I don't want to. By the way, during this show, spoiler alert.
Yeah.
I mean,
spoiler alert. Wait,
you're really going to get mad at us later.
Yeah.
So these guys are kind of charged with watching over him, but right. one of them doesn't really like him.
Yeah.
They've never liked each other, and he's got a really nice rifle. They steal his rifle and leave him for dead.
Yeah.
And he lives. Like, he drags himself back and nurses himself back to health. Like,
yeah.
gets maggots and puts them in the wounds and stuff like that to eat the dead tissue, and he lives.
Yeah.
And then goes on this quest for vengeance.
Right.
Against these guys, and it's interesting where that goes. And
yeah.
human nature and forgiveness and things like that, where it kind of goes in the story. It doesn't go where you think it's going to go.
Right.
And, I mean, it's just a great book, and I'm looking forward to seeing the movie. Wrestling-related, I finally had a chance to read J.J. Dillon's autobiography, Wrestlers Are Like Seagulls, which is – it's a great – there are two kind of wrestling books. There's the wrestling book where the guy dishes – dirt and talks about the wild parties and the wild lifestyle and why he likes this guy, why he doesn't like that guy, and then there's the book that J.J. Dillon wrote, which is a man that worked very closely for years with probably the two most influential bookers in the past, at least from 80 to 2000, and even 2015, it was one of them, Vince McMahon.
Yeah.
And with Dusty Rhodes.
Yeah.
And with Eddie Graham. So he worked with Graham in the 70s and Rhodes in the 80s and McMahon, and he was their right-hand man. I mean, especially Dusty, and people don't realize that connection between he and Dillon and Crockett, that he was kind of Dusty's right-hand man.
Right.
And then he was Vince. He did Jim Ross's job before Jim Ross had it for Vince McMahon.
Yeah.
And those are the kind of things that he was there for. He was in the booking meetings. He was obviously one of the four horsemen, but he doesn't dish the dirt on people.
Yeah.
He doesn't talk bad about anybody.
Right.
He just basically talks about his career.
Yeah.
And where he was at and booking philosophies and things of that nature and stuff that he learned. And the stories of his time with Vince McMahon, where he's a workaholic, and he expects you to be the same. And just the way McMahon wants everybody to work for him to be in debt.
Yeah.
Not to him, even though they are. Like, JJ's wanting to get a house, and basically they give him the money. So he's on the hook for this big house that he can't afford.
Yeah.
Up in Connecticut.
Yeah.
But he owes them the money for it.
Yeah.
And it just, like, it's real interesting in how he does not care for Vince McMahon.
Really?
Yeah. He just doesn't appreciate the way he deals with people.
Right.
And it's if you want an insight into what it's like to work for Vince McMahon at a high level, then I would definitely recommend that book.
Yeah.
And the cooler thing is, when I bought the book, I didn't realize it. I opened it up, signed by J.J. Dillon.
Wow.
So I thought that was cool. The other one I'm reading right now, Jim Cornette and Mark James' new book, Tuesday Night at the Garden.
Yeah.
Which is, if you're interested in the history of wrestling.
Yeah.
You got to read this book. I mean, because it's like this little bitty slice of this one place, the Louisville Gardens.
Yeah.
And it's just so they talk about, like, there's all these historic things that happened there. Like, and I wish I could remember his real name.
Yeah.
But I can't.
Yeah.
So this wrestler shows up.
Mm-hmm.
or he's supposed to show up, and he's a few weeks late getting there, so they put somebody else out there and kind of say that it's whatever.
Yeah.
I can't remember the name, because yeah. I don't have notes in front of me. I wish yeah. I'd written it down. Anyway, when he finally shows up, they say, well, we've already got a guy by that name, so we got to come up with a different name for you.
Yeah.
And he chooses the name Ed the Strangler Lewis.
Oh, my.
And how you had a guy named Don Lewis Thez that started. Not started there, but in early on in his career, before he dropped the Lewis and the Don and just became Lou Thez.
Wow.
Comes through that area.
Wow.
And you get to see, it starts out with a history. And what I'm reading right now, they go through every card that happened during this era.
Oh,
and
wow.
give the results for it. And then with little backstories about things. And you see the rise of Jerry Jarrett. And more importantly, the rise of Jerry Lawler on the card. You can see him come in as a tag team wrestler, and you start to see through the results, he's in the opening match, and then he's in, and now he's main eventing as a tag team. And you can kind of, you get a sense of what it was like. And you see Jackie Fargo, who kind of took Lawler under his wing as his guy. And was kind of helping him along. Same with Jerry Jarrett. And this all leads up to the Jarrett-Gulas split.
Yeah.
But it's a great, great book. And it come with a DVD of a lot of the matches.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I got it.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Did you know that when you bought the book?
Mm-hmm.
Man.
Yeah, because I bought it from Cornette. I mean, I like my book, when you open it up, says... To Mark, from your friend Jim Cornette.
Yeah. To my second favorite Mark. Because, you know, his name is Mark.
It is. He told me that a year or two ago. But, yeah, if you're interested in the history of wrestling.
That's cool. I didn't know that.
It's a really, really good book, man.
Yeah.
Really good book.
Their collaborations are always really.
Yeah. I mean, Mark James is good. And it's interesting. I mean... It's got there's a lot of pictures in it, which is cool about a Cornette book, I think.
Yeah.
Some people might be critical of that. The guy's such a meticulous note taker.
Yes, that's what I was just going to say. The Midnight Express scrapbook is tremendous.
I mean, he took so many notes even as just a fan.
Yeah.
And then he continued doing it. He's got ledgers. If you've ever watched one of his timeline DVDs, everybody else is showing up and just talking about stuff. He shows up and does the timeline, and he's got the ledger from that year, and he's going, okay, on this date, this was the main event at that.
This was the crowd. So, this was the gate.
Right, and he does the exact same thing in this book. And I talked to Mark James, believe it or not, on Facebook. I mean, we weren't talking face-to-face, just talking back and forth on a post. And he gave a lot of credit to their team. He said it took them 2 years to write this book. And it wasn't just Mark James and Jim Cornette.
Right.
That there were other guys helping them do all the research and get all the information together. And basically for every card where it's available, they put the old event posters. They put a picture out beside
it. That's cool.
And then tell you what the card was and anything memorable that happened. There's a lot of promo pictures that guys would have made of themselves throughout the book. So you'll see young Jerry Lawler.
Wow.
And it's cool. Or it's interesting. You can always tell the big star in a room. Remember when Dusty Rhodes walks in a room?
Yeah.
We were there and we saw that. One time in my life, I saw Dusty Rhodes walk in a room, and there's no doubt that he is the Bull of the Woods when he's in a room.
The Bull of the Woods.
He just puts that off.
Yeah.
And you can tell when you look at all the pictures of these other guys and then you see a young Jerry Lawler that he is a star.
Yeah.
So those are my four books. What are your books?
The book you just mentioned is available on Amazon. We'll put a link to that.
What's that?
The Tuesday Night at the Gardens.
I'll tell you this, though.
Yeah.
He would never give us any promotion, because that's not what Jim Cornette does.
Yeah.
He would never do anything to help us out.
Uh-huh.
That's just the facts as I see them.
Yeah.
But I will tell you, if you order it from his website.
Yeah.
I think it's Jim Cornette or Cornette's Collectibles.
Yeah.
One of those two. You can Google it. He'll sign it for you.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Forgot about that.
I got it from him at WrestleCade.
Yeah.
But
I would suggest, if you're going to Listen, he makes a lot of appearances. Yeah. I would try to get it from him like you did.
Yeah, get it from him because he'll sign it for you.
He'll sign it, and you'll have a story, and it's really good.
Yeah.
I've got a couple of books I want to throw out. Non-wrestling, there was a book by a guy named Ed Klein, who was a Clinton insider, wrote a book about Hillary called Unlikable. And I've always been very fascinated with the Clintons. I'm not a fan of the Clintons. I've just been fascinated with kind of their rise to power, some of the behind-the-scenes stuff. And if 5% of the stuff in the book is true, oh, my goodness. You know what I'm saying? I love reading political insider books, and this is exactly what you would expect from a book like this. You know,
it's dishing the dirt on Hillary.
Basically, Hillary is just a horrible human being. But again, I like kind of the hearing the gossip, that kind of stuff. Really, really good. He also wrote the book Blood Feud. I may have read that this year too, and it's good. And it's about just how the Clintons and Obamas don't get along at all. Mm. Also, right here, this is a book I picked up. It's called Organic Wesley by a guy named William Grant.
I've heard of him.
He's a farmer from Virginia, and it's a book. I mean, it says here on the cover, Christian perspective on food, farming, and faith. And this was just a really good book that I'm still chewing on, but it's about, you know, kind of John Wesley's view on how we should do sustainable farming. He's very critical of some of the farming practices of today, and just goes into a lot of the history of farming in the United States and how it is really in decline. But for me, for somebody who grew up on a farm and is now pasturing, this kind of
combines. I think your father would say you grew up on a ranch.
That's exactly right. Grew up on a ranch.
He is not a farmer. He's a rancher.
He's a rancher. That's very true. We actually just started a series at our church where I bought soil. We're talking about the parable of the sower, and we are actually getting things of soil and planting things and hoping they'll grow over the next couple of months. So that book was very influential. Then two wrestling books I want to share. Bill Apter bought his book, Is Wrestling Fixed? I didn't realize it was broken. Again, not a book that dishes the dirt, but it is stories you haven't heard before because it's stories from the other side. Right. It's stories from what it was like to cover wrestling through Bill Apter's career, his dealings with the McMahons. He opposite of J.J. Dillon, Apter has a phenomenal relationship with the McMahons. I mean, they almost consider him part of the family. That's a really good book. One I got on Audible, and this is the one, King of New Orleans, How the Junkyard Dog Became a Wrestling Hero by Greg Klein. That's a book you got to get.
Yeah.
I got it on Audible. You talk about it goes through the history of Mid-South. Really, this book is more about the overall business of Mid-South than it is just about the junkyard dog.
It a biography or autobiography?
I don't even know that it's a biography because it really doesn't tell some of his life story.
It's like it uses his story to tell the story of Mid-South.
Yes. And he is a small part of... you know, there's like a 3-year span that they focus on, but
I have to check that out.
Sometimes it's, I mean, if I were reading it, I think it would be kind of hard to follow because they kind of jump around sometimes and you don't really know where they're at. And again, I went into this book thinking it's a biography of Junkyard Dog, and it's not that. It's really a biography of Mid-South Wrestling and Junkyard Dog's role in it. But it's a phenomenal, phenomenal book. A lot of inside information, a lot of quotes from Bill Watts, Ernie Ladd, things like that. A lot of good stories.
I don't think your boy has got it. Is that story in there?
oh, is that when they brought him in and they were putting him in like 30-minute matches? And yeah. Watts is like, what are you doing?
He's
like,
and Ernie, like, he put him in with somebody. I forget who
it was. He's like, hey, yeah.
I don't think your boy's got it. He just went 20 minutes and he can't do anything. And Bill Watts fired Ernie Ladd.
Yeah. He's like,
they said he fired Ernie Ladd like every couple of weeks.
And they really talk about the relationship between Watts and Ladd. And that was it's just an intriguing book. Makes you it takes you through. You can go back, watch either the Mid-South DVDs or the Mid-South shows on the network, and you can kind of follow along. So it does kind of give you a timeline of the Mid-South stuff and the big New Orleans shows. That's kind of the high points of the book is, all right, we're leading into this Superdome show and this Superdome show. And
right.
Just really good. And again, for me, 99% of it is wrestling before I started watching. And stuff that we missed, but
I'll have to check that out. That sounds good, man.
Very good. So let's talk about another type of book that you and I like to read. I don't know how much you read this year. What was your favorite comic book?
I don't think I read much this year. I went back and read the first Batman, the New 52.
Yeah.
I read that, the first storyline.
Right. The Zero
Court of Owls.
Court of Owls, yeah.
And all that. Night of Owls. I read that.
Yeah.
Really, really liked it up through the, you know, when the Joker come back and his face had been cut off. I have Endgame, but I haven't read it yet. So I'm looking forward to I'm sure you're going to spoil it. Like that's your favorite thing of the year.
No. Endgame.
And then Old Man Logan, I read it. Now, they've started a new one that what I do is wait until a storyline's complete, and then I just pick up the trade
paperback.
So when the new Old Man Logan finishes up, I'll pick up the trade for it. And the new Walking Dead compendium.
Yeah, it just came out.
So I got to get it because I read the first two, and then I started buying the books when they would come out every month or two, I'd buy those, and I said, I'll just wait on the compendium. So
yeah.
I've read the first two, so I'm going to pick this one up here in the next few weeks. So
I really liked the end game. I really liked it. You can't really – the repercussions of the end of end game, they're just coming back around to them.
Really?
I will say – they did a book called Batman Eternal, which was a weekly book, started in 2014, went into 2015. About 52, I guess it was 52 issues. Just a phenomenal story. So many twists, so many turns. I remember at issue 25, 26, I'm like, how are they going to stretch this out? Because I already know who the bad guy is. And then it's just like, what in the world? And then it was just great the way the story is told. I want to sit down and read it all in one sitting. But it was really good, and they're following that up with Batman and Robin Eternal, which is a weekly storyline. They're about 10 or 11 issues into it now. The one that's coming out that's two issues in now is Dark Knight 3. You had Dark Knight Returns.
Yeah, I saw that in the store.
Dark Knight Strikes Again, and now you got the Dark Knight 3 Master Race.
May I ask you a question?
Yes.
Is Frank Miller writing this?
No.
Okay, that's all I want.
This is a Frank Miller. To hear Frank Miller tell it, this is a Frank Miller approved production.
Okay.
But it was... But Frank Miller would be the first to tell you he's writing his own thing.
Okay. All right.
So they'll do this, and then there's another Frank Miller deal coming out.
Okay.
Which I didn't know. Frank Miller is an old fart. He is old.
Yeah.
He's not a spring chicken.
Did you ever see that movie he directed, The Spirit?
Whew. Was it bad?
Oh, it was awful.
Really?
It's one of the worst comic book movies I've made.
They tried
so bad. Like, some things are so bad they're worth watching.
Not that.
And it is not that. It is so bad.
Because they tried to make it like Sin City.
Yeah. He tried to use that visual style that they used in Sin City, and it worked for Sin City, but it...
I never saw the second Sin City.
It's good. It's good. It's not... it's not as good as the first one, but I mean, right. I ain't watched it again. For me, that's what it's got. That's how I can tell if I like a movie or not. Yeah. Do I watch it? And when I talk about the best movie I saw of the year,
yeah,
I'll talk about the fact that I bought it digitally, and when it finally hits Blu-ray, I'll be buying it on Blu-ray. So yeah. I will own a digital and a hard copy of it because yeah. I thought it was that good.
Yeah.
So yeah, and it's gonna surprise you what it is, I think.
Really?
Yeah.
I think so. Let's talk about music. What was your favorite song or album of the year? Anything?
I'm going to tell you what, Heath. I basically stopped listening to new music somewhere around 1996 or 1997. Really? Somewhere. After the grand 6 months when Guns N' Roses' Use Your Illusions 1 and 2, Red Hot Chili Peppers' Blood Sugar Sex Magik, Pearl Jam's 10, and Nirvana's Nevermind. Mm. It seems like there's one other album. Oh, the Black Album by Metallica.
Oh.
All those came out in about a six-month span of each other 1 year.
And it's been downhill ever since.
And I ain't listened to much new music since then.
Yeah.
I got an iTunes card.
Right.
For Christmas. And the first thing I bought was the Wu-Tang Clan's Enter the Wu-Tang 36 Chambers.
Yeah.
The, you know, 36 Chambers of Wu-Tang, whatever the name of it is. With Bring the Ruckus and Wu-Tang Clan Ain't Nothing to F With and
yeah.
and stuff like that. So that's, and I bought I'm Bad by LL Cool J. I bought that on, you've heard that song.
Oh, yeah,
I'm
yeah,
bad,
yeah.
Bad, you know? And
I don't eat Oreos, I eat Cool J.
Yeah, don't eat Oreos, eat Cool J cookies.
Yeah.
As far as new music that came out, man.
Yeah.
But I don't even. I mean, I don't.
But you're answering still, the question. The music that you, is Wu-Tang Clan. That's
still,
what you've been talking
I
about
still,
that on Facebook.
Yeah, I still like. I buy vinyl, man.
Yeah,
and not because I'm a hipster, just because that's the music that I like. I can get cheaper.
Yeah,
in a lot of ways.
What's the best vinyl album? The vinyl album that when you find it, you're like, aha! I'm gonna listen to this.
Man, I'm trying to think. Because I didn't know you were going to ask me that. I would have looked at all the vinyl that I bought this year. One that I have been looking for a really long time that I found right here in Seneca.
Mm-hmm.
I know what it is, and I finally found it last year. And that was the Ozzy Osbourne Randy Rhoads tribute album.
Mm.
I finally found it on vinyl.
Yeah.
So I would say I have been looking for that for a long time. And it's one of those. Here's the thing about vinyl. Everything from the 70s is. People think that the older stuff is what's hard to find. I see Beatles albums and Elvis albums yeah. every record store I go into.
Yeah.
That stuff, anything from the 70s is easy to find.
Yeah.
What's hard to find is 1980s hip hop and heavy metal.
Yeah.
That's what you can't find anywhere, especially hip hop,
yeah.
because so many. People who had the albums legitimately were DJs and they would play those albums and they keep them or they yeah. used them up. I mean, they did a lot of work with them and a lot of that stuff's really, really hard to find.
Hmm.
So anytime I find something cool like that,
yeah,
like that's where it's at. Anybody can go online. And here's what people don't understand about me.
Right.
I can go online and buy any album I want.
Ever, yeah.
Whatever I want, I can get it online.
Yeah.
That's, to me, is not fun.
Yeah.
I enjoy being at a record store.
Right.
Flipping through them and finding the album
yeah.
that I've been looking for. That's why I do it. That's what I enjoy.
For you, it's not about simply listening to the song. It is the experience of finding the album, taking it home, and popping it on.
Taking it on and cleaning the record, mm-hmm. putting it on the turntable, lifting the stylus, and then the music starts.
Yeah. Kids today don't know that crackle.
I enjoy that.
That crackle when you first put
it's a beautiful thing, man. It's a beautiful thing. That's what I enjoy, and I did there again, the music that come out last year. Other than that Adele song, that everybody lost their minds over? I don't know.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, okay, I'll tell you this. If you want a song from 2015, the one that I can think of is that guy, Chris Stapleton or Chris Singleton.
Right.
Whiskey and You.
Yeah.
Great song.
Yeah.
Great song.
Is that the one he did with Justin Timberlake?
No, that is not the one he did with Justin Timberlake. Sorry. This is a song where he talks about the difference between whiskey and the woman that he lost.
Gotcha.
And it's just a song about an alcoholic. And it's an old school
country song.
You could imagine Merle Haggard, Waylon Jennings, Willie Nelson, Johnny Cash, Kris Kristofferson, any of those guys writing, or Hank Williams Jr., David Allan Coe, writing or singing this song.
Yeah.
It's an incredible song. And it just popped in my head that of all the music in 2000, and it says a lot that I don't know if his last name's Singleton or Stapleton.
This is true, yeah.
But I know it's one of the two. And that is a great song. When my wife let me hear that song.
Yeah.
I mean, we listened to that album.
Yeah.
And it's good.
Cool.
It is good. And if you know me, I love rap. I like rock and roll from the 60s and 70s. I like heavy metal and rap from the 80s and early 90s. And I like old country.
Yeah.
Like pre Garth Brooks, George Strait.
Yeah.
I just listed the guys that I like.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's the kind of country music that I like. And I just like it. I love it and listen to a lot of it.
Yeah.
Especially when I'm drinking beer.
Yeah.
Nothing better to me than to drink a 12-pack and listen to some of my Waylon Jennings records. I love it. This is my show. I can say what I want
to. I love it.
I like drinking beer. I'm 40 years old and I work all the time. If I want to drink beer on my day off, I don't care what anybody else thinks about it. I don't care what your religion says about it. I don't care what your moral values, your ethical values say about it. I'm a grown-ass man, 40 years old. I work every day and pay taxes. And if I get off and got a couple of days off and I want to drink beer and listen to Waylon Jennings, that's what I do.
People died for you to have that right.
Yeah. And yeah, I drink the whole 12-pack. Sometimes I drink 18.
He ain't, folks, this man is not lying.
I remember the first time you ever saw me drink was probably maybe the first time you ever saw me, but recently.
Yeah.
And you was like, I think you just drank more beer in an hour than I've seen anybody drink in the past 10 years.
Yeah.
How did you drink all that?
And listen.
And did it quick, too,
when
boss.
That episode drops, dare I say, it's very apparent that there is some chicanery going
is
on.
Is it that bad? Was I slurring my speech?
Is it that bad? It was so bad, Mark says, hey, you're going to need to edit this. Listen, folks, this is a man who just said, this is my show. I can say whatever I want. It was so bad, Mark said, hey, you think you can cut that out? It's like as soon as we got done recording, Mark's like, oh, you're going to have to cut that out.
Did I say what I think I said?
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, you did, Mark.
Yeah, you did.
All right, well, can you cut that out?
It was great. So, this is, you know, if you listen to this show, you either identify with Mark or me. Maybe both of us sometimes. My album, two albums I want to say. Totally opposite sides of the spectrum. You mentioned the Adele. We got that out. My kids love Adele. I love Adele. Matter of fact, we were listening to, we listened to the whole album. Drake heard a song. I was like, hey, I want that song on my wedding.
I remember we were going somewhere. He wants it at his wedding. That's funny. Yeah. We were going somewhere, and he was like, can we listen to Adele? And I was surprised how quick you had it on the, oh, yeah, we can listen to Adele.
Well, that was the first the purchase music playlist. I'm the opposite of Mark, okay? I'm the guy, hear a song, I hit SoundHound, I buy it, you know?
Really?
For the most part. The second album, I don't think the album was released this year. I was getting my car washed. This is probably before Thanksgiving. And at the car wash place, the Today Show's
on. The car wash. Working at the car wash.
But on the Today Show, they had, it was like Mark McGrath and like just random pop stars. But they got together and did a Christmas album. They said, you know, everybody's always does the same Christmas songs, and we wanted to get some people together and do new Christmas music. So I downloaded the album.
Did they sing Funky Funky Christmas by the New Kids on the Block?
No, they didn't.
we were singing that the other week.
But they did. They had the song they did on the Today Show was a song called Snow, Snow, Snow.
It was about cocaine.
No, it wasn't.
Ozzy Osbourne's got their Black Sabbath has got a song called Snowblind, and it's about cocaine. So it's different. Different song.
Different song.
Okay.
It was a song it was the kind of song, it was the kind of album, the whole album, just a very upbeat, even you would love the Auld Lang Syne, or I don't, Auld Lang, the New Year's Eve song. They sing it like normal, and then they kind of go bluegrass with it. They kind of, and it's really good. But
I like that your bluegrass goes right to Deliverance.
Doesn't it all?
Yeah.
But it was just very upbeat.
Right over the road from where it was recorded.
They do the half the album is some of the old favorite Christmas songs. And then a lot of it is new Christmas music.
Did they sing Text Me a Merry Christmas? No, song is awful.
Oh, wait, who sang?
Have you ever heard that?
No, I have not.
I forget the name of that a cappella group that does it, man.
Wait, it's not Pen and Tonics, is it?
It may be. Yeah. I think it's Text Me America, and it's all about like using social media. It's the stupidest
song. Now, Pen and Tonics, their Christmas album last year was really good because they had Let It Go. They're typically good. But anyway, those were my – but it's Band of Merrymakers, Welcome to Our Christmas Party, and just really good we know all the words to all
I saw a now. Band in concert called the Band of Heathens. Anything like that?
No.
They're not what you think they are, though. I did go see Rob Zombie in concert this
year. You did.
That was great.
I may have gone to like one concert this year.
Yeah, we saw him, and I mean, he rocked the house, man.
You said that he does smaller venues in getting ready for the big
tour. That was kind of what he was doing. They were touring a few little small spots, and Simpsonville just happened to be one of them.
Wow, that's
that
so
they
cool.
came to kind of work their live show out before they went and did some of the bigger shows.
Yeah.
And we're thinking, we saw Chris Robinson at Black Crowes.
Oh, yeah.
I saw him. It was a pretty good show. I mean, he didn't do any Black Crowes stuff. He just kind of did some of his new stuff. But it's still good.
Yeah.
Hopefully next year we're thinking about going to see Carolina Rebellion. But
you know, Adele's coming to Atlanta.
Oh, is she? I won't be going to that. But Guns N' Roses is supposed to be doing a stadium tour, so we'll see if they don't implode. Yeah. Hopefully, they'll hit. Me and Crystal, I usually don't say my wife's name, just, you know, but yeah. I did that time. We're going to go. I mean,
yeah.
As long as they're somewhere in the Southeast, we've kind of decided we're going to go see Guns
N' Roses. We live in
a
pretty good spot because you can get Charlotte or Atlanta.
Yeah, they're
going to. Every big tour.
Right. They're going to come to Charlotte or Atlanta one.
Yeah.
And we're going to try to go see them. So.
Cool. Let's talk about TV shows.
Okay. There's one that we'll probably both agree on.
Okay. What was your favorite TV show?
I had two. I think TV stopped being good, you know, when Seinfeld went off the air.
Right.
Well, I take that back. There's always a couple of shows that come out every year that I get
into. Network television.
Right. That's what I should have said that. I should have. I think sitcoms stopped being funny for the most part.
Oh, yeah.
When Seinfeld went off the air. But it's funny, generationally. I got friends who think they stopped being funny when Gilligan's Island went off the air. So, because they're older than us. But,
right.
But, yeah, broadcast network television sitcoms, I think, are not good at all.
Right.
Rarely one comes along. I watched The Big Bang Theory, but it's a one-trick pony.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're nerds.
Yeah, I get it. And
they're
nobody's
nerds.
Listen, nobody's like that. I don't know anybody who obsesses about everything.
Right.
To hear it, then those guys obsess about Lord of the Rings and every movie that's ever come out, and Star Wars and Star Trek. Who does
that?
Nobody does
that. So unrealistic.
Yeah, it really is unrealistic.
Yeah.
If you're into geek culture, that they would obsess about everything.
Yeah. You got to pick. You can't be DC and Marvel. You're one or the other.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. Like, they obsess about everything in nerd culture, video games and whatever. And, nobody does that.
Nah.
Nobody's that big of a nerd. Okay? They might be, but they ain't. It's because they ain't obsessing about nothing.
Right.
But Daredevil.
Yes.
I mean, God. How great was Daredevil?
That was good. Hey, March 18th?
They just released the trailer today.
I saw it.
Cause
it's
I
not
have,
really of a trailer, though.
It's like a teaser, right?
It's doesn't have any new footage that I'm aware of.
Okay.
It's very much a teaser, yes.
The impression that I get, though, is that the Punisher shows up like within the first 5 minutes of the first episode.
Hopefully so.
That like they realize that's what people want, and they're not going to hold him off. I mean, he's going to show up. And I think that sounds like it's going to be the conflict for the season is these two guys in the comic books is that way. I mean, they very much understand that there's a need for one another, but there's always the confliction there that one guy is judge, jury, and executioner, and one guy is, you know, not even the jury. He just kind of like tries to bring them under control and do it with the scales of justice balanced.
Netflix is like the Young Bucks in a lot of ways. Netflix is like, this is what people want. This is what we're going to give them. And we're going to give it to them all at one time.
Yeah.
I haven't watched Jessica Jones yet.
I started it.
But I watched Daredevil in 2 days.
I watched it in 3 because I had the weekend off and my wife was working. And I was like, you know, I don't feel like doing anything this weekend. Yeah. What can I do? And I said, well, I heard good things about Daredevil. So I watched the first episode and bam.
And Vincent, I can't say his name.
D'Onofrio. Oh.
He is Kingpin.
He is.
He is Kingpin.
He was phenomenal. And he played that character.
How does he not win an Emmy for that? Does he?
I don't. Yeah,
can
that's
he win
crazy.
An Emmy for that?
I would think
he
so.
He was great.
Yeah, I mean, he got that character that he's the any bad guy. We've had this conversation. Our friend Kerry asked me one time, what do you think makes a good heel?
Yeah.
And I think that sense of righteousness.
Yeah.
That a good heel has, where even though the means may be questionable, there's always a little bit of truth to what they're saying.
Right.
I think that's what makes the best bad guys.
Right.
Yes, he had bad tendencies and he did the wrong thing, but his idea was to make his city better, and I believe that.
Yeah.
Even though he wanted to make it better the way he felt like it needed to be better.
Right.
Be damned what anybody else thought and whoever he had to hurt along the way. But that, spoiler alert, I'm going to say it now. Fast forward about 2 minutes if you don't want to hear this.
Yeah.
When he, at the end of the final episode, was discussing the Good Samaritan, I just thought he summed that character up, that I'm trying to figure out my role, and you know more about the story than I do, but like I forget how he said it, but basically I'm the guy that left the guy laying on the side of the road.
Yeah,
like I've tried to figure out my place in the story.
Yeah,
and who am I? The guy who keeps walking? Am I the Samaritan? Am I the guy who's laying there? And I realize I'm the one that left him there for dead.
Yeah,
I just man.
Yeah,
dude. He was great, man. And
he's such a phenomenal actor. So underrated, in my opinion.
The episode when they had taken that little boy hostage, and Daredevil goes in and just and they like one take.
Yeah.
In the hall, did the fight, and then he walks in, opens the door, and says, "It's okay, you can come home." And you know, he takes his mask off so the little boy can see his face, and it was just to me, that was the best fiction show. I enjoyed it more than I did the season of The Walking Dead, which we're in the middle of, which I'm enjoying. Don't get me wrong. I love The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
But it's kind of formulaic at this point.
Yeah.
Doing the same stuff, different scenarios. They're really going to have to shake it up. But
the other, I was going to say Daredevil, and I thought that... I thought this season of Sons of Anarchy Again, spoiler alert. I'm not trying not to spoil it for you.
You can. I mean, there's a reasonable amount of time, I think, that you should wait for spoiling things, and I have passed that.
I think
that I can't get mad at it.
Well, I think it ended the way it had to end, and I think Jax does what he has set out to do, and
you can talk about it, Heath. The statute of limitations on me watching it is out. I can't get mad at you. I can't get mad at somebody for spoiling something that's a year old.
The whole season is about somebody has killed at the end of season 6. Okay. I got to spoil it all.
Do it.
I'm
you sorry. Can. That's fine.
So at the end of season 6, Gemma kills Tara in a fit of rage. Okay.
All right.
But they tell. And then she kills Tara. The sheriff comes in, goes to call it in, and Juice kills the sheriff. And him and Gemma leave, and they make it out like the Chinese killed Tara. So this whole season, the beginning is Jax is trying to basically start a war with the Japanese. And so he basically is just ruckus. Stuff with the Irish, all this stuff coming to a head, and then he realizes the truth. He finds out the truth, and in the final episode, Jax makes everything right, kills everybody that needs to be killed, but he does it all. So there's no heat on the club. And gets the club where they need to be business-wise, gets the club in the good relationship, everybody that they need to be. And again, Jax takes care of everything and then literally rides off into the sunset into a semi-truck.
Really?
He basically he goes to the rock where his dad died and gets on his bike. A cop pulls over because they're looking for him because he's been going around all day killing people.
Right.
And they're looking for him. And then he shoots at that cop a couple of times and jumps on his bike. And there's this caravan of police cars behind him. And he just throws his hands up and...
Wow.
I mean, it was... And then the crow.
Yeah.
It was a good...
You hear Keith Sutter said the way he thought he wished he could have ended it?
How was that?
It was all... We would flash away from all of that.
Yeah.
And it would be Jax, but his name would just be Jackson, and he would be riding a Vespa. And it would all have been a daydream because he thought he was on his little Vespa.
That's funny.
That's fine. I knew that, as far as spoilers go, here's my opinion on it. You reasonably have to give people enough time to watch something.
Yeah.
I think if you go see... We're going to get there, okay?
Yeah,
but if you go see Star Wars when it comes out, you shouldn't get on social media immediately and say, I can't believe they did this.
Yeah.
But, man, after, you know...
We're 3 weeks
after a reasonable amount of time, you've had enough time, like me with Sons of Anarchy.
Yeah.
I'm on, like, season 3.
Yeah.
And I ain't going to watch season 4 anytime soon.
Yeah.
I got other stuff I'm in the middle of.
By the time you get around to watch it, you're going to forget we even had this conversation.
Right.
Yeah.
I will. So, my other nonfiction TV show, have you been watching, have you watched Making a Murderer?
I have not.
My friend, this is the most captivating story I have seen in years.
Is it? Is it?
We are so hooked on this show. We're not done with it yet.
Yeah. Are all the episodes out or is it releasing periodically?
Yeah, it's on Netflix. I mean, they do everything at once.
Yeah.
Man, this is one of the, it will have you, so mad at the judicial system. And every episode will take you, and I'll spoil this because, I mean, everybody knows how this ends. It's all over. I mean, this was it's a true story. I mean, it's basically a 10-part documentary about Stephen Avery, not the Atlanta Braves pitcher, who in 1985 or 84 was convicted for the sexual assault and beating of a woman.
Yeah.
And it was basically they framed the police in that town. I don't want to say they framed him.
Right.
But they decided he did it and refused to listen to any of the contradictory evidence at hand.
Right.
And then years and years later, he gets exonerated for the crime thanks to new DNA testing coming along. And basically their unwillingness to admit that they made a mistake.
Yeah.
Even when in the 90s, they said, we got this, the other suspect that they had at the time that did it.
Yeah.
They had him in custody somewhere else in the 90s and said, look, we just wanted to call y'all and tell you we were talking to this guy, and he has confessed to us that he committed a sexual assault back in the 80s in y'all's town, and there's another guy in prison for it right now. And they didn't do anything with that information.
Wow.
Until like 8 years later, the day after they released Stephen Avery from prison, then the guy filed a report that this call had come in.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And it was bad. And then, like, they start deposing these guys and they bring a lawsuit against the town.
Yeah.
Clearly, he lost 18 years of his life.
Right, right.
Over a crime he didn't commit.
Yeah.
Because there was a bias towards him.
Yeah.
From the police officers. So he brings this, it was like $2 million a year for 18 years. It was a $36 million lawsuit. And every town and every police department and every hospital and every company that I work ever
every
worked
church.
For, every church has an insurance policy that covers them.
Yeah.
Well, the insurance company said, you guys are on your own. Clearly the evidence pointed to this other guy.
Yeah.
And people have called you over the years and told you that we got a guy that you thought did it, who said he did it.
Yeah.
And you didn't do anything with that information. Our insurance is not going to cover this $32 million. Y'all are. If you have to pay it, the town's going to have to pay it. And I don't know how you're going to come up with it.
Yeah.
So, lo and behold, this girl goes missing in town, and they find her car with his blood in it, and bits of bone on his property that had been burned.
Yeah.
And you just go back and forth. To me, it's like the ultimate exploitation film.
Yeah.
If you know what the term exploitation film really means, it doesn't mean what you think a lot of times. All films are exploitation films. They're meant to exploit your emotions.
Right.
And that's what this show does. And you go back and forth between thinking he may possibly be evil incarnate, or he could possibly be an innocent man who's being framed. And there's contradictory evidence there. If you take a woman and tie her to a bed and torture her and rape her and slit her throat, there would probably be some DNA evidence on the mattress, or on the floor or on the walls.
Right.
And there's nothing.
Yeah.
There's no blood splatter in his house where all this allegedly went down. They busted up concrete chunks in his garage where allegedly he did some stuff, and they couldn't find any blood.
Yeah.
And they're like, even if he scrubbed this.
Yeah, it was still show.
What they said was they found his DNA. So had he scrubbed the floor with bleach, his DNA would have been gone too.
Yeah.
So, like, they have no DNA evidence except for this bullet fragment that they found like 6 months later in his garage after the police department had been told, y'all aren't going to be part of this investigation. After they went in is when they would find evidence. They would go on to the crime scene and, oh, well, look, there's her key. And so y'all searched this place 8 times, and this key's laying in plain sight, and none of these other investigators from this other town found it.
Right.
But this one guy comes in, and look at there, it was just laid right there on the floor.
Right, right.
So
Now, what state does this take place in?
It's Wisconsin, I believe, okay. Or Minnesota.
Okay. I've seen so many people talk about
it. It must be Wisconsin because I remember them talking about Green Bay.
I've heard that this is the television version of cereal.
Right. And when you watch it, you'll get that that's somebody was influenced by cereal and said, hey, we should do a show like that. Yeah. But they were videoing it as it happened. Like they. When you're watching it, if you ever watch like Dateline NBC, it's like the ultimate episode of that.
It's like 10. It's like a whole season.
It's like a whole season of one really good story. And it's not reenacted. Like, they got cameras in the courtroom, and it's people being questioned on the track. It is captivating.
Listen, if that dude with the white hair on Dateline is narrating anything about your life, that's bad.
Yeah, you've either made some bad decisions or you ain't with us no more.
But what did investigators find?
Yeah. So, like, to me, that's the best
next
show.
Next on Dateline? All right, so, yeah.
That's the best thing I've watched all year as far as my television show. It's
incredible. I'm definitely going to check that out. And
I have turned, like, I always tell people, wait until the end of episode 4 to get shocked.
See, I've heard that. I've heard people have put
episode. You'll hear a lot of talk about it.
Okay,
because it is that moment when you say, "Holy crap!"
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Love it. So how far? It's 10 episodes.
Yeah, we actually watched just 10. We finished 8 last night.
Gotcha.
So, and then the next two were he's already been found guilty.
Yeah.
At this point. That's not spoiling anything. It's pretty much out there. There's a petition to get him released or whatever. I don't know if that's going to happen. I don't see President Obama overturning that conviction. I mean, I could be wrong. I mean, because there's always evidence.
See,
my thing is, and I don't understand the law, but my father's a judge, and we have conversations about it. And he was a police officer for years.
Yeah.
There's two things. The burden, you don't have to prove your innocence.
Yeah.
They have to prove your guilt.
Yeah.
The state has to prove your guilt. And as you watch this, what you'll realize is that's not what's happening. They're not proving his guilt. His lawyers are having to prove he didn't do it.
Yeah.
They weren't offering up a lot of evidence that said he did do it. He was having to offer evidence that said he didn't.
Right.
And you also you shouldn't convict somebody if you're a jury member beyond a reasonable doubt. If there's a reasonable doubt that this person didn't commit this crime, you're not supposed to find them guilty.
Right.
And there was, based on the evidence presented, reasonable doubt that he didn't commit this crime. The biggest being, had he carved somebody up, there'd be some blood somewhere.
Right. You would think. In my experience.
To me, that's what it's all about.
Right.
If you ever watch somebody gut a deer?
Right. Yeah. Not pretty.
Because I have seen this happen. Yeah. I ain't ever done it.
Right.
I have gutted plenty of fish.
Yeah.
And one squirrel that I ate. And because my daddy, when I killed the squirrel, said, oh, you a hunter now. This is when I was little. And I killed a squirrel. And that's what my father said to me. Oh, you a hunter now. Well, guess what hunters do? They eat what they kill. So come on. And he took me outside and we skinned that squirrel and he cooked it and I ate it.
What did it taste like?
It's not bad. I mean, it was a little tough.
A
little tough, but I mean,
I ain't never
killed another squirrel.
Yeah.
I can tell you that. I ain't been hunting since then, I don't think. But I don't like deer. I'm not morally or ethically opposed to hunting in any way.
No.
If people want to go out and cultivate an animal or whatever, cull an animal to feed their family, I don't see anything wrong with that. I don't do it because I don't like the way deer meat tastes.
I don't like sitting out
plus
cold.
It's cold in the morning.
I
don't want to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and go walking around when the cold. I mean, there's a lot to it with that. And I don't, I'm not knocking it. I'm not going to say if people want to do it.
Hey, more power to you.
Personally, I don't see the sport in killing a deer.
Yeah.
If you want to go kill a bear with a bow and arrow, there's some sport in that.
Yeah.
And I know that I'm not trying to start a big animal rights debate. I don't care.
Yeah.
You kill a deer, that's your business. To me, it's not something that I enjoy doing.
Yeah.
If you want to feed your family and that's how you want to do it, knock yourself out. I ain't got no I ain't got no problem eating beef and
yeah,
chicken
if
and pork.
If you want to kill a deer and send us the meat.
I still wouldn't eat it because I don't like deer meat.
What about bear? You ever had bear?
I never have. Well, I had chili made out of bear one time, I think. I've had chili made out of deer, and it was pretty good.
Yeah.
And I like the back straps off of deer. Then the tenderloins. Those never are good if they're cooked right.
Yeah.
But as far as like ground up deer meat and deer steak and stuff, I'm just not really into it. It's got a funky, especially the hamburger meat. I don't like it.
So let's segue into movies, and I want to talk about a movie that involved a little bit of hunting and involved a man previously mentioned, Mr. Vincent D'Onofrio.
Okay.
Jurassic World.
Okay.
One of my favorite movies of the year.
Really?
Went and saw it with the kids, and when you take your son to a movie, and he's sitting there about to pee in his pants, and he's telling you about to pee in my pants, and I mean, it's such an intense movie.
Yeah. Do you have it? Because I got the Blu-ray at the house. If he liked it that much, I'd give it.
I think we got it on iTunes. Okay. And we've watched it several times. And Chris Pratt, just so entertaining. So, I mean, he's kind of like the guy of the hour from Guardians of the Galaxy to Lego Movie to this.
Right.
I just like them. You know, they didn't reinvent the wheel, but I thought they did a good job of reinvigorating a good franchise.
Good franchise.
Good.
It was franchise. It was a good promotion.
It was a good promotion.
Have you only got one movie? Because I got like a couple that I'm going up to.
I mean, that one's one. Age of Ultron was okay.
See, both of those movies were just okay to me. I liked Age of Ultron, and I liked Jurassic. Don't get me wrong.
Right. I think what made Jurassic World for me was my kids.
Yeah.
That for them, that was their Jurassic Park. I've done seen that three times.
Well, see, and that was what I was to say about Jurassic Park. I was just old enough when Jurassic Park came out that it didn't have the same impact on me.
Right.
And you were too, where it was like I could see how the people that are 5 or 6 years younger than us probably felt about Jurassic World like we felt about the movie we'll save for last.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Because it was a big deal to them.
American.
And I got a feeling we're going to have to cut off and just make talking about that one show.
You might be right. You might be right. So share your non-movie.
And everybody knows what movie we're talking about. If you don't, you're crazy.
You don't know, you need to wake up. You need to be awoken.
But that was not my favorite movie of the year.
Really?
No.
What was your favorite
movie? I'm not going to tell you my favorite yet. I had about four or five.
I want you to build up to it.
Okay.
Because really, I'm going to tell you. Force Awakens for me was the end all be all.
I know it was.
That's the only movie I want to talk about.
That's the one you cared about the most. And you probably, I could see it being your favorite.
And so, like you just said.
And it may be my sentimental favorite.
Like you just said, we're going to save that. But I want you to share your movies, and then we'll wrap this sucker up.
Okay. Mad Max Fury Road.
I haven't seen
it. Incredible. Yeah. I mean, just, it starts out good. I love the fact that they didn't reboot Mad Max. They didn't retell his origin story.
Yeah.
They just assumed that you saw the first three movies, and you were okay with somebody besides Mel Gibson playing him.
Right.
And he's wandering around out there in the wasteland.
Yeah.
He meets Charlize Theron. And it starts out, I would say there's a couple of minutes of setup, and they on the road, and they drive for 2 hours with people chasing them and fighting them in cars and blowing stuff up. It is one of the greatest. I love car chase movies.
Yeah.
From the 70s. I'm a huge fan of Gone in 60 Seconds, the original one.
Yeah.
Vanishing Point, Dirty Mary, Crazy Larry. You know, I love those kind of movies, man, where the people are driving around in souped-up muscle cars. And the original Road Warrior films, I love all three of them. And this movie, and my wife didn't like it because she felt like that Mad Max wasn't the real hero that Charlize Theron was. And if you've seen those movies, you'll understand. And that's what I told her, That's always the case. He's a guy that comes along and lends his particular set of talents to helping people around him that need his help. And in this case, it was her and taking these other, getting these girls away from where they were at.
Yeah.
And it's just an adrenaline rush, man.
Yeah.
And I finally got it on Blu-ray the other day. I've been waiting on the price to come down, so it dropped. So I picked it up, and I hadn't had a chance to watch it yet. And I know I'm going to forget something.
Yeah.
But The Hateful Eight would be probably right up there. You saw it.
Yeah.
Just an incredible film, kind of based on The Thing and from the 80s, the old John Carpenter film.
Yeah.
Set in a blizzard, trying to figure out who the bad guy is amongst them.
Right, right.
I can't say enough good. I'm not going to spoil that
one. So many twists and turns and something about Tarantino. Something about the dialogue that he writes.
Yeah. Oh,
that can make you watch people just sitting around talking.
Yeah, because nobody talks that way.
Right.
Right. But it's so great because it's so – there are times that you will just be rolling on the floor.
Yeah.
And then you – and it's always been like this with his movies, especially this and Django and Pulp Fiction and Reservoir Dogs and Jackie Brown. I mean, all of his movies, I think. That you're laughing at something that is deplorable.
Right. Right. Right.
Whether it be violence or whatever words are coming out of people's mouths that are so offensive.
Yeah.
And you're laughing about it. And you're sitting there. I was in a theater with white people and black people for that and Django, and everybody was laughing together.
Yeah.
At these deplorable things that were being said and that we were seeing depicted on screen in front of us, but everybody's there together enjoying it for what it is.
Right. Right. Right.
And cheering when the bad guys get what's coming to them and laughing when, I mean, you know, you seeing people's heads explode and you're laughing at it and you realize, why am I laughing at this?
Right.
What's that say about me that I find this funny, but it's presented in such a great way.
Yeah.
And the foreshadowing with the letter and then how that kind of plays into the end.
Yeah.
And the guy who...
May I see the letter?
Right. And then to see at the end the black man and the racist put those differences aside and lay there and share a moment.
Right. Were they equals?
Right, where they treated each other as equals and they trusted each other, you know, because it ain't got nothing to do with what color we are.
Yeah.
I trust you because this happened.
Yeah.
And we all that we can, and then entertaining the offer and then turning it down because this guy, what you might be saying, I may feel that way inside sometimes, but he tried to save my life and you didn't.
Right. That's exactly right.
And then, you know, to bring the letter back into it and both of them acknowledge that it was BS.
Yeah.
And kind of have a laugh about it.
Yeah.
And who knows, did they live or did they die?
Right.
Did the people show up and slaughter him? Were there even 15 guys waiting?
Is he who he says he was?
Was he the sheriff?
Right.
A lot of unanswered questions.
Yeah.
At the end of the movie.
Yeah.
And I loved it, but it's not my movie of the year.
All right. What's your movie of the year?
My movie of the year, Straight Outta Compton.
Ah.
The story of Ice Cube, Eazy-E, Dr. Dre, MC Ren, and Yella getting together and forming the world's most notorious rap group, N.W.A., and going through all the ups and downs and the trials and tribulations where they got together and were friends and financed this thing. And their manager, Jerry Heller, treating Eazy-E different than he treated the other guys.
Right.
And how that created this money riff. One guy's getting paid a certain way. And to see these guys who, and they're very open about it. The only one of them that was a real gangster was Eazy-E.
Right.
The other guys, don't get the idea. There's always been this idea that Ice Cube and Dr. Dre grew up in like a middle class neighborhood. They didn't.
Right.
They grew up in a very poor environment, in a, right. but they were not involved with the gang activities.
Right.
Like Eazy-E right. was.
Yeah.
And that informed who they became as people.
Yeah.
And the idea was, let's present our product and tell people what it, and this is what's going on. This is yeah. what we grew up with. This right. is, this was our life. And then to see them kind of start to believe that they were those characters.
Right. Right.
And they kind of acknowledge, there's a few moments in the film where they acknowledge, now they kind of start to act like gangsters.
Yeah.
And they're not gangsters.
Right.
And then to see the falling out when Ice Cube leaves over money.
Yeah.
And then Dr. Dre and Eazy-E split up. And you see Snoop Dogg get introduced into the picture. And they yeah. And the recording of all these iconic songs that I love.
Yeah.
And still love, whether it's Boys in the Hood or, you know, G, Ain't Nothing But a G Thing.
Yeah.
Or, and I sound like a nerd talking about that stuff.
No, but, that's, yeah.
You know, Straight out of Compton. I mean, yeah. the recording of that album.
Yeah.
And that rise, and then the way Suge Knight gets introduced and gets everybody out of their contract, and whether you believe the theories or not.
Right.
That during that beating, he may have, and I'm not saying he did or he didn't, because yeah. I don't know, but that he may have stuck Eric Young, Eazy-E, with an HIV-infected needle.
Yeah.
While they were beating him up. So he would release, because he owned a record company
yeah.
that produced NWA's albums, and Dr. Dre and that wanted out, and yeah. Suge Knight got him out by beating up Eazy-E.
Yeah.
That's what happened.
Yeah.
And so whether you believe Eazy-E, and then to see Eazy-E find out that he's got, and this, like, this movie becomes heart-wrenching.
Yeah.
To see that they had kind of gotten back together, he fires Jerry Heller, and he goes up, he talks, Eazy-E does, and he apologizes to Ice Cube.
Yeah.
And he calls Dr. Dre, and he apologizes to them. And I'm sure they've whitewashed some of their, because they produced it. Dr. Dre and Ice Cube produced the film.
Right.
Ice Cube's son plays him.
Oh,
in
right.
the movie. So he looks like Ice Cube.
Right.
And he sounds like Ice Cube. And just to see them, like, on the verge of making another NWA album, and then Eazy-E finding out he's got HIV.
Yeah.
And, like, that ultimately this film is about friendship.
Yeah.
Above everything else. And the way that you can have a falling out with a friend.
Right.
And that maybe you can still make it work.
Yeah.
And, you know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
It kind of has a hopeful end. You know what
right,
I mean?
Right.
It was the if it doesn't win Best Picture, then there's something wrong.
Really,
it's a phenomenal movie.
I've heard only good things yeah. about it, and definitely wanting to, because I am,
don't watch it with the kids. No.
I'm completely ignorant of all of that.
Right,
because I didn't listen to that.
Right, music. And I did,
and so. So for
and
me,
even like
it's
one of
their
most controversial song,
right?
You know, F the Police.
Yeah.
Growing up with a police officer as a father, he was very much opposed to me having something like that in the house.
Right.
Even if he wasn't, he wouldn't have wanted me listening to that. But to watch the things that happen.
Yeah.
That lead to people having that type of attitude. I had a discussion with a friend of mine mm-hmm. one time about something, and it's different but the same. He said, this was back when the economy was kind of rough. He mm-hmm. said, well, they keep talking about the economy being bad, and I just don't see where it's bad. And I said, that's because you make $25 an hour.
Yeah.
You don't. Yeah. Why would you see that the economy is bad?
Right.
You make good money.
Yeah.
And you don't have to worry about whether you can afford to buy gas or whether you can get groceries. You don't have to
right.
make that call because you got money to do both.
Yeah.
But there are people out there that are struggling. Just because you ain't never struggled.
Right.
Or you ain't never had, you're not struggling right now, doesn't mean that other people are not.
Right.
And just because you and I have never had a bad experience with a police officer doesn't mean
right.
that other people didn't.
Right.
There's a lot in the news today that I don't like to see when it comes to the way police are treating people.
Right.
And that's not their job. It's not your job to go out and be a judge, a jury, and an executioner.
Right.
You know? And nobody loves and supports the police more than me, but if you're not treating that's people right. right, you don't deserve that respect.
Right.
And people that have grown up in lower income areas, specifically minorities in this country,
yeah.
have been treated unfairly by the police.
Yeah.
So I've never experienced that.
Yeah.
I've had my name had make the police let me go when right. I might have got pulled over.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I've never had to deal with being pulled out, slammed on the hood of a car, made to lay face down.
Right.
I've been pushed up against a wall by the police one time.
Right.
But I ain't never, not for no reason.
Yeah.
Than the fact that I'm black and I'm in the wrong neighborhood.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And so you can see how if somebody has that type of experience enough times, they could write a song called the police.
Right. Right. Yes. And I think, like, for me, what I'm trying to learn is you have to realize, like, everything you just said, there are systematic injustices in our country. And just because you have not seen it or been affected by it doesn't mean that it's not there. And right. it also doesn't mean that there aren't good people in the system trying to change it, but there are also bad people in there taking advantage of it, taking advantage of other people, and holding people down and holding people back. And
I remember one of the best lessons my pop ever told me, being a police officer. He said, man, I've seen the best and the worst of people doing this job.
Yeah.
And he said, I can tell you right now, and I was young when we had this conversation. He said, I've seen the best and worst, and I've seen it from every race and religion. There's good people and bad people, and that's what it boils down to. Race and religion and sexual orientation don't have anything to do with somebody being a good or a bad person.
Right.
You know? So just like I said, just because I haven't experienced that stuff doesn't mean that I can't appreciate that somebody else has and why it would lead them to have the attitudes that they have about things. I don't advocate violence against police officers, but I also don't advocate violence against African Americans just because they're African American.
Right.
And I don't advocate violence against Muslims just because their religion's different than yours.
You know, I was thinking about this the other day. Oh my goodness, we could go for a while on this. That there's a lot of things with the Black Lives Matter that I do agree with. There's a lot I don't agree with. Same thing with what's going on in Oregon now.
Right.
And I'm of the opinion, I wish these two groups would get together. Because if they sat down across the table like you and I are right now, and they start talking, well, what's bugging you? I think they'd be closer to the same page than they realize. And my plea to them, good gravy, is, folks, we're all upset about similar things. Right. We're all upset because how it affects you, the system's broken. And right. I think from both sides, as a white man, I've got to admit the system's broken toward my African-American friends and neighbors. And I think they've also got to understand that, especially in areas like they're talking about in Oregon that is predominantly white, the government has been a little shady with all of us.
Yeah, that's the thing. When the day comes when the American people realize that the right wing and the left wing are both flapping to make the same bird fly.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
And we don't need either one of them.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Amen, my friend.
That's
Amen.
What I'm saying.
That's right.
We don't need the right wing or the left wing to tell. I know what's right and what's wrong.
Right. My future, okay, my destiny, okay, is not going to be determined by who is elected president. No. Okay? And for me to... Do I think elections are important? Yes, I do. But if you think that if this party gets elected, everything is going... That's going to be the end of the world. Or if this party... It doesn't matter which side you own. You're getting played.
Yeah.
You're getting played. And and that's the sad thing for me is I see so many of my friends and they have invested on both sides, both political parties. They're invested so much in certain issues of a certain, you know, that, I mean, both parties got blood on their hands.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, I've got to stand before God. He's not going to ask me if I was a Republican or a Democrat. You know what I'm saying?
I do.
And now, do I tend to lean one way more than another? Yeah. But that's not the, for me, politics or a political party. I love talking politics. I love talking what are the things we could do to change our country, make our country better, make our community better. And I just don't think the top-down theories work.
No, they don't. Because the ones at the top, and you, I mean, they're the ones that keep all the stuff. It doesn't make it now.
Right, right, right.
So here's why I think Straight Outta Compton is the best film of the year, ultimately. We talked for 2 hours about all kind of stuff, and then I brought that film up, and we talked about what we can do to make our communities better.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it generated a meaningful conversation. And it shows you another person's perspective and way of life.
Right. And if you also knew, if some stories and theories are to be believed, then a lot of that culture that NWA sang about, was a part of, may or may not have been manipulated by government influence and government operatives.
Right.
You're talking about, you know, it is a, I mean, like I said, it's one of those films that's on my to watch list. Is it on iTunes now?
Yeah.
See, I need that. Yeah. I just haven't had a chance to, but it's definitely not because of not wanting to see. I wanted to go see it at the theater because, like I said, that's a part of the 80s that I'm ignorant
And there
of.
Is that. Like, aside from all the social commentary on the movie, it's also really cool to see one of the most iconic hip-hop albums ever made.
Right.
Produced. And kind of how all, like, one of the most iconic acts in rap music. That led to one of the biggest hip-hop, The Chronic, being one, this huge album. And to see all that played out. Okay, and that was my only criticism, if I have one, of the movie.
Yeah.
Is that we kind of went from we're all friends to we're all going to get back together. And they glossed over the meat of that story, which was the big feud.
Yeah.
And because they said a lot of hateful things about each other.
Yeah.
And they just kind of whitewashed that.
Yeah,
it happened, but we don't want to focus on that. Let's focus on, and I get that. Let's focus on the positive.
Yeah,
but I would like to have seen some meat in that, and I'm hoping the unrated director's cut is a good bit longer. I think so. Maybe they kind of, because it was already 2.5 hours.
Are there
so
any
sure
good documentaries out about them?
I don't know.
I don't know either. I just know if you were a kid in the 80s, you either had a Los Angeles Kings hat or a Raiders hat, and you didn't tell your parents why.
I had a Raiders jacket.
You did? Was it satin?
It was one of those old school. No, it wasn't satin, but it had the Raiders logo over the back. Yeah, man. I gave that to a homeless shelter or a battered women's shelter. I can't remember what it was. I mean, back then, I did. They were doing a coat drive for something, and I gave it to them.
Well, listen,
I love that jacket, man.
We have told
you. Do you remember it? Because you said you did, like you remember.
I remember one of us having, in our circle of friends, Derek McLaughlin wore Clemson jerseys, and you had the Raiders jacket.
Yeah, Derek did wear always wear Clemson stuff, didn't he?
Yep.
And Tracy wore a lot of Atlanta Braves stuff.
Tracy, oh, yeah. He yeah. had, yes.
And Kerry wore, like, whoever was winning that year. I'm just, Kerry, if you're listening, we all three know it's true.
So, listen, we've just shared with you our favorites, some of our favorites from 2015 in pop culture, TV, books, comics, movies. We've saved the best. We're going to do a whole episode on The Force Awakens.
Mm-hmm.
Saving that. So what you need to do, you need to go on iTunes, Stitcher Radio. You need to download the Double Dropkick Show. You need to go to Double Dropkick Drubble. Good grief.
There you go.
DoubleDropkick.com. You need to click on a banner. You need to tell a friend. We still got five or six states we don't have listeners in. Utah, I'm talking to you. Need some listeners out there. We want to be, we're already worldwide, but we're not quite nationwide, and that bothers me at night.
Uh-huh.
There's a part of my soul that feels incomplete. You need to go on Twitter. Talk to us on Twitter. I'm at Heath Mulliken.
I'm at the DDK Show.
Go on Facebook. Like the Double Dropkick Show page. As Drake says, click that like button. Click that thumbs up. But the wrestling you grew up with, it's the greatest group on Facebook. Everybody's nice. We talk about any aspect of wrestling. Past, present, future. That's where you can talk about it. You're not going to be made fun of to your face. We do that on the show sometimes. But listen.
How about snacks? Are we still doing that?
I don't know if they're doing the snack box. I got to see if they're replenished.
Okay.
So there'll be banners. You need to click on them and check out these great movies and great books. But as always, for the Double Dropkick Show, I'm Heath Mulliken.
I'm Mark Whitman.
And that's it this week, fans. So long for now.